You're currently listening to Radio National, of course. And yesterday also, I talked to Paul Drescher. He came into the Music Show studio with his double duo. That's the name of his ensemble, of which he is a member. And before we hear from Paul Drescher, the composer and instrument inventor, and indeed other members of Double Duo, we're going to hear a performance that they recorded for us. In actual fact, this is only three members of Double Duo in this performance. Paul Drescher himself was sitting this one out. He usually plays electric guitar. But the performers that we're going to hear are Joel Davel, who plays the marimba lumina, of which more later, Karen Bentley Pollock playing violin, and playing the piano, Lisa Moore.
Thank you.
Well, that was music by Paul Drescher. We heard part of Double E-Cat, and it was played by Lisa Moore on piano. Karen Bentley Pollock was playing violin and playing apparently a range of percussion instruments, but in reality, the marimba lumina was Joel Dovell. And sitting right in front of me is the composer, Paul Drescher. So I'll start with you. I think maybe we should begin with that title, which is something to do with dyeing, isn't it?
It's to do with weaving.
Weaving.
Yes. It's double E-cat is the style of weaving that's the most sophisticated style that it's common in Southeast Asia and in parts of Africa and other parts of the world. But that's where I think it's most evolved. And E-cat is what they call it in I believe in Southeast Asia, and in Indonesia in particular. And so it's where both the warp and the weft, the threads of the warp and weft, are individually dyed so that you can come up with the most complex patterns.
I see. And what's it got to do with your piece?
Well, I was in the 1970s, I was a passionate student of Indonesian traditional classical music, particularly Javanese gamelan and Balinese gamelan. And I performed in gamelans, and I built gamelans actually as well. And so when I wrote this piece, I sort of decided to let the Indonesian musical experience suffuse some of this composition. I don't often let that happen on the surface, but in this piece, I decided to start with pentatonic scales. And of course, there are a variety of pentatonic scales. And so I started to work with those and to modulate them. And so we hear them in a certain sense in the most bare form in the piano solo at the beginning, but also there's passages that where pentatonicism suffuses the work, but much harmonic richness can come out of it if you start to play with those different juxtapositions of different pentatonic scales.
Yes, it certainly has sort of overtones of Bali listening to it.
Yes,
I mean that's the resonance that's left in my head.
Right,
suggests that those sorts of scales. Although I don't know anything about them technically. So.
Well, but your ear is absolutely right, accurate there.
Let's maybe talk about your work building instruments, because what's the impulse, would you say, to build an instrument? Is it to do with facility, that you want to get hold of sounds faster and more efficiently, or is it that you want new sounds, or are you just a tinkerer?
Well, certainly it's not the most efficient way to get sound. It may be the only way to get a new sound. And so the inspiration primarily comes from curiosity about sound, and because I have a lot of experience doing it, and I'm a performer myself, most primarily as a string player, pluck strings, like I'm a guitarist, but I also play the piano, and I do play some percussion. So the curiosity about what would happen if you try something with a material that hadn't been tried before or isn't part of the conventional approach to how a string is used. So an instrument that we're touring with here in Australia is the quadricord, and it has strings that are 15 to 16 feet long. And when strings are that long, they behave differently, and certain things become possible that are not possible with conventional length stringed instruments.
Like?
Well, for instance, the harmonic series. So when you if you have a very low fundamental pitch on a 16-foot long string, then the harmonic series, which, say, if you try to define the 7th harmonic or the 11th harmonic on a violin or on a guitar, the interval is tiny. And because the fundamental pitch is set in the middle of our hearing, it's extremely high, so we don't really hear it with any accuracy. Mm-hmm. And the space difference between adjacent harmonics is tiny and really not possible to physically control. Whereas on my instrument, the distance between the 10th and the 11th harmonic, which is a very unique interval, not the same as on the piano, is about 2 inches. It's no difficulty whatsoever. And because the fundamental pitch is so low, it is able to be, it's right in the middle of our hearing. So you can use invented instruments to study new forms of tuning.
And then how does that lead to new forms of composing?
Well, every instrument is an interaction. So when I build an instrument, when I say, I wonder what would happen if I built an instrument with a 16-foot long string, then I start to improvise with it, I just experiment with it, like every musician does with their instrument. And usually there'll be something that is intriguing, something that's compelling, and it suggests a possible music. Sometimes you have to then evolve the instrument in some way. You have to refine the instrument. You have to say, I want to focus on that aspect because compositionally that seems like an important resource. And so then you might rebuild your instrument. You might change it in some way. Let's say when I first built the quadricord, we just had a flat bridge. And so that's useful if you're plucking the strings, but not useful if you're bowing, because then you could only get the top and the bottom string. So then we had, if I wanted to do arco on that, I had to make an arch bridge.
If you want to bow it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So it's just, there's many, and then of course, we'd also drum on that instrument. And so that meant it made us adapt to it in a different way. So different kinds of things.
So it's to-ing and fro-ing then.
Absolutely.
You invent an instrument, then you try and do something on it, which you realize it can't quite do. So the instrument becomes modified and...
But that's what all instrument inventors, I think, have always done.
Yes.
I think we follow the evolution of keyboard instruments into the pianoforte, all the different steps in between. They were solving both musical problems and creating new resources for composers, or composers were demanding them. You know, Wagner with extending the ranges of instruments and, of course, putting on valves on brass instruments. These are all things that some inventor thought would be possible, and some composers said, I really want that.
Mm. Yes. And very often the composer's ideas have come first, actually, and have rather forced the issue. I mean, the clarinet in Mozart's time, for instance.
Right. And extending the range have usually been composers saying, I really want more of that.
Joel, maybe you could demonstrate that the instrument you've got in front of you, which looks innocuous enough, it looks like a mallet instrument, a tuned mallet instrument. But we heard, if I'm not mistaken, marimba, vibraphone, glockenspiel, gongs, cymbals. Drums.
Exactly. That's all of them.
Yeah.
You got it.
And you've got them all there on that keyboard.
Yes.
So individual keys have different samples?
Well, I have the possibility of actually making the mallets affect what sound it is. But in this case, it's actually a fairly standard practice as a synthesizer would change. You hit one button, say, and the sound changes. Well, I have... what are sort of virtual buttons, little pads that can also be used as percussion instrument or percussive sounds, but I simply use them to change the setup, and so I turn my keys into whatever variety of sound I would like.
Right, I see. So you program it in advance according to what you're going to need in that particular piece.
Exactly. There's such a wide range in this group of sonic timbres. Typically, Paul and I do things when he was talking about the quadrichord. Well, I will actually emulate his sounds or take samples, snippets of recordings of his sounds and manipulate them with this instrument, almost like you would a mixing desk. And then I can also play these very conventional music like this.
Does it feel strange ever? I mean, watching you playing the glockenspiel there with these great big felty-headed mallets, it looked very strange.
Well, it has been many years of me trying doing these strange things, so it feels normal to me now. But yes, it does have a little bit of a disconnect there in terms of the fluffy mallets and the very hard sound. It's true. But then there's also a very, you know, you think about, especially when I'm playing a sample of something, I hit something, whether it's recording of a voice or his sound, it has nothing at all to do with a mallet. It might have something to do with a bow or speaking.
Could you switch the thing on for us and just give us a quick sort of up and down demonstration of the sound you've got on that?
Sure. On this, for instance, I was just simply playing the Glock, but there's quite a variety.
Oh, you got prepared piano.
Prepared piano, or for instance,
drum set.
Drum set, of course, and a little bit more interesting might be.
Fantastic.
So I can actually manipulate the sound.
You've got a Cologne studio there.
Yeah,
I think,
exactly. That's really the idea. You know, Stockhausen would be jealous.
Yeah. And Lisa Moore, you play the piano.
Yep, that's the piano. Christofori's invention.
I was interested to ask you about, I'm tantalized by your iPad, which is sitting there on your...
Yes.
On your music stand, everybody else is playing from paper.
Yes, well, I'd like them to get away from paper because, I mean, what's one of the problems with new music is all the pages and the paper. And someone came up with an app, and it's $4.99, and you just PDF and scan your music into it. And I use a Bluetooth foot pedal, an Airturn BT-105, and it's on the left of my soft pedal. And it just turns the pages when I pump it.
So you just flick it and it turns the page.
Yeah,
for you.
There's been a little adjustment period. I've been doing it for about a year and a half now. Mm. And actually, now when I do concerts, I usually just tell the audience right at the beginning, yes, there's an iPad, don't worry, it's going to work. And because they'll spend the whole concert wondering what's going on and come up afterwards, and instead of commenting on the music or my clothes, they'll come on. It'll be like, how did you do that?
Yes.
They think it's auditory.
I'm sorry to have fallen straight into that trap.
I knew you would.
By the way, you look lovely today. But when you're working with the Marimba Lumina, for instance, I mean, do you feel, in a sense, kind of a little left behind that you can't make some of these sounds? I mean, are you angling for some additions to your instrument?
Well, I mean, I don't quite agree with Paul on some of those things, because I think that the piano is capable of making new sounds all the time. And that's my business. That's what I do. And so I'm varying a pre-existing piano. We know that there are people who have flat, dull sounds, and people who are too loud and brash, and people who can do amazing pianissimos. So there's amazing variety for what seems to be a pretty much given. I'm glad that I don't have to deal with the sound problems of setting up a Marimba Lumina, frankly, because there's always something that's weird in the rehearsals. Like sometimes the volume just pops out and no one knows why, and we have to take a 10-minute break. So, you know, no, I'm not jealous.
These are the frustrations of the pianist that are coming absolutely to the fore. Whereas, I mean, he could simply have taken another hour and brought all of those instruments in, and there wouldn't have been any of these problems with dynamics suddenly going wrong.
There would be other problems.
But that's
there
because problems. These guys are, you know, they're what you call musician geeks, you know.
You know, I recall that we have to tune that thing. And sometimes
that's
right. That takes
right.
An hour
you
and a half.
You don't like that, yeah.
Yeah, it takes an hour and a half, and you have to spend all this time getting used to the piano. So there are, I think there's trade-offs in every.
I'm going to break this up now.
In fact, I walked right in here and started playing pretty much today, so there you go.
That's true.
It's been very good to have you all on the show. Thank you very much indeed for coming in, Paul Drescher, Lisa Moore, Karen Bentley-Pollock, who we haven't heard from, but she did play the violin earlier. And lost his name. Joel Duvall. Yeah. You can catch the Paul Drescher and these musicians at Campbelltown Arts Centre tonight, and at the Canberra International Music Festival from Sunday. Actually, for a week. I mean, there are lots of performances there. If you want to find out where they're playing and what they're playing exactly, go to the Music Show's website and you'll be able to find your way to the Canberra Music Festival's website. And then there's a residency at the Queensland Conservatorium of Music from May the 20th with a concert on the 24th, music by John Adams, Martin Bresnik, and Paul Drescher. You're listening to The Music Show on RN.